Blog Talk Radio.
Business goes on as usual. The corn and the profits are high, and TVs boom in every living room. They tell us what deodorants to buy. Business goes on as usual, except that my brother he was 25 and very much alive, but the dreams have all been blasted from his head in a far off land with a gun in his hand. Died in a war he did not understand. While business goes on as usual, there's plenty to choose from the rack, but rumor goes that the latest thing in clothes, the latest thing in clothes will be black. But business goes on as usual, as usual, as usual.
Welcome to If Life Gives You Lemons, Make a Martini Show. I am your host, Gail St. Francis Johnson, formerly known as Miss Delicious. Okay, on If Life Gives You Lemons, Make a Martini Show, it's a show for the tame and the untamed. It's serious with a dash of humor. Life is what you make it. You may be rich but unhappy or broken happy. You may have had many adversities in your life. How many pity parties did you have? Ever went from being a victim to becoming victorious? Ever been down so low you could swing your legs on a dime? Do you have a sense of humor? Ever laughed at yourself? What is your overall view of life? Want to vent or just get something off your chest? If you answer yes to one of these questions, this show is for you. On my show, you get free exposure. If you're a business owner, starting a business, author, expert, or just want to share information of importance, I invite you to come on as a guest and let's chop it up. Sorry, there will be no discussing religion or politics. If you're interested in becoming a co-host or guest, inbox me at gdelicious37@gmail.com. Again, that's gjdelicious37@gmail.com. Good evening, everybody. Hope everybody got your worship on this morning. If you didn't, you still can just worship in the privacy of your own home. But in any event, give God the glory, because if it wasn't for him, you wouldn't have woke up this morning. So many people did not wake up this morning. May their souls rest in peace. All right, this show this evening is about gun shooters, or people who have guns, and rapists, and what they have in common, some of the traits they have in common. First, we're going to discuss the gun shooter. And that song Roberta Flack sang was Business Goes On As Usual, was a song about her brother, well, not her brother, but speaking of a brother who was in the war, a needless war, shot to death, you know, fighting something, fighting somewhere for no reason, and business goes on as usual. And that's generally what happens when a person gets shot or die or whatever. Business continues to go on. And, you know, I guess that's the way it's supposed to be, because that's just how people have been programmed for so long, that, you know, if somebody dies, you go to the funeral, whatever, whatever, whatever. The next thing you know, you're right back at whatever it is what you were doing before. You know, then some people don't even mourn for people when they die. Some people don't even go to their funeral or pay their respects when a person dies. But that's just how society has programmed some people, and some people just are. Now, as far as these guns are concerned, seems like it's just getting so much more prevalent of someone picking up a gun and, you know, killing someone for whatever reason. Lately, the reasons have been anger issues. And, you know, danger is one, the letter D is one letter away from anger. So anger and danger go together. If a person has issues, mental or, you know, whatever's going on in their life, and they have to pick up a gun to resolve those issues, then that's, you know, what society has to suffer through. They say that a person people who can get guns are people who are not felons, or people who don't have mental issues and different things of the sort. But that still does not stop a person from getting a gun, because you can go down on your corner, buy a gun, go to a gun show, get a gun, order a gun online. You know, it's so easy to get a gun. And a person, you know, they say, well, he was so normal, he was this, he was that. You don't know what's the meaning of normal, you know, because these people that have been shooting these people up had issues. You know, they either got angry with their wives or their girlfriends or a family member or the job, you know, different things of that sort. And when a person has issues, there is something wrong. But that does not give them the right to pick up a gun and go shoot up their old employees, or to shoot up their wives, or kill their children or their mother-in-laws and the dogs and all these old crazy things that have been going on, you know, with people who are getting these guns. So my thing is, there need to be some type of people control, as well as, well, gun control, that's out. Because, number one, the only way you can control that is to get rid of all the guns, because I don't care if they downsize making these vicious guns or, you know, whatever they do. A gun is a gun. And guns don't kill people. People kill people. So if you get a gun in your hand for whatever reason, you know, you're angry, you're upset, or you're going through this, you're going through that, and you decide, hey, I'm going to kill my whole family, then I'm going to kill myself, you know, kill yourself. don't take out your family and, you know, people that had nothing to do with the issues that you're going through. Even if they have something to do with the issues, that does not give you the right to pick up a gun and kill them. You know, that's not right. So I'm just, you know, it's just been something that has been boggling my mind, you know, just like the D.C. sniper, John Allen Muhammad. He was going through something with his wife, and so he was angry, and he tried to set up a diversion so that when he killed his wife, he wouldn't get the blame of it. It would be blamed on a sniper or whatever, but fortunately, he was caught, you know, before he could, you know, kill anybody else. I think he killed maybe about 13 people or something like that. But one is just too many, you know, on account of him being angry with his wife, wanting his kids back. And, you know, just it's crazy. You know, it's really crazy. And she got away with her life and her children, and they're safe now. You know, they executed him in 2009. And his accomplice, Malvo, he's in prison for life, you know, but he just messed up that little young boy's life, you know, on account of him wanting a father figure in his life. He was left on an island by himself, and, you know, John Muhammad comes along and basically takes him under his wing and, you know, made his life what the little boy thought was better than what he was having, as far as, like, you know, surviving on in the island by himself. But little did he know that in the end, it wasn't worth it. You know, he's teaching that little boy how to shoot and, you know, kill people, and all on account of his anger issues. You know, if you have issues with your wife or girlfriend or whatever, you know, try to talk them out. And if you can't talk them out, walk out. You know, killing people is the worst thing that another person can do, is to kill somebody. So they feel that, okay, I'm mad at her. I don't want her to live anymore. And then the killer part behind that is, after you kill all these people, then you take the coward's way out, kill yourself, because you know if you get caught, you're going to go to jail. And, you know, you're thinking, well, I don't want to go through that, whatever, whatever. Think about the person that you killed. They're no longer here. You know, you done killed your wife, killed your children, killed the dog, and then you kill yourself. Such a coward. You know, that's the coward move. You know, and then, like, the Timmy McVeigh who bombed that, I can't really remember where that actually happened at, but I think he got executed. Yeah, he got executed as well. And with that, I don't know what his issues were, but he had issues too. And these are the type of people who get their hands on guns, and they would deem them being normal until actually they do something that they know that's not normal. Because who would take a gun and just shoot up people for no reason? You know, there's a reason. There is a reason, but the reason doesn't make sense. But they do have their own reasoning. You know, and it's sickening. It's sickening how a person can get a gun and just go and kill people. And I'm quite sure, well, everybody's familiar with post office killings. A disgruntled post office worker gets angry, go back and kill everybody. It's just behooving to me that a person would be so devious that the only solution they come to is killing people. That's really sad. That is really sad. You know, and I do realize that some people who may need to be put to death or should have been put to death. But see, this is the thing. The death penalty, I'm against it because innocent people have been killed as well. So therefore, if you are killing innocent people, you know, and it's supposed to be, this is supposed to be a punishment for a person of guilt, but you killed an innocent person, then it should be just done away with. Let a person that you know that's guilty, is proven actually guilty, the best thing you can do is to let them suffer in jail. Putting them to death, that's the easy way out, because they're out of their misery, but the person or the crime that he committed, a person has to suffer with that for the rest of their life, losing a loved one for someone who tried to rob them or whatever the case may be. And then they're just put to death. That's it. You know, but the person that's left may have been shot and turned to quadriplegic or paraplegic, or, you know, you just don't know the circumstances that a person suffers after being shot if they survive it. You know, sometimes it may not be that bad, but then sometimes it is bad. So all these guns and people getting their hands on guns, I don't think that a person can be actually screened to the point of saying it's okay for him to have a gun, it's okay for her to have a gun, because you never know when that person is going to find a reason to use that gun, maybe illegally, maybe they may use it in the wrong way. So I'm thinking the best way is not to have guns, period. You know, because it's just terrible, horrible. In the wars, they're just shooting people up, snipers, and the wars, and I mean, it's terrible. It's horrible. Guns are nothing nice. They're nothing nice. You know, they're even making guns with pink guns for women, you know, to carry, and these little cute guns and all this old crazy stuff. But if she gets that gun and her husband makes her mad or whatever, and she just blows his brains out, how cute is that? You know, it's nothing good about guns. I'm sorry. I just can't, I just don't see anything cute about them. Not to say that I've had a couple of guns in my life, and I'm not gonna, you know, sugarcoat anything. And I pulled guns on two people that were I was in a relationship with, you know, and I would have killed them if they hadn't ran, you know. So then I'm thinking, you know, if I had killed this person, I probably wouldn't get out of jail about now, because that was. That was many, many, many years ago. But the first time I pulled a gun on a person was because we had gotten out of a relationship and I was in another relationship, and this person could not accept that. Now, the person I was in a relationship with had given me the gun because I had expressed to them that, you know, this person, you know, is constantly popping up or bothering me or whatever. So they gave me the gun, and one evening this person came to my apartment, and me and the person I was in a relationship was in the apartment. And when I got the gun, the person I was in a relationship got the gun from me and put the person out of the apartment. But, you know, I was just so filled with anger. You know, this person just thinks they can just, you know, walk in and out of my life and, you know, just do what they want to do. But, you know, for a reason, it was all for a reason that the person got the gun from me, which was a good thing, because that was the first time. The second time, second time I was in a relationship, and this is a different relationship, and a family member had given me this little gun. It was really a little, Dillinger, a little small .22 gun, very small. You could fit it in your hand. And this person that I was in a relationship, he kept irritating me to the point where I went to a party one night. He comes in the party trying to pull me out of the party. So I went into my purse and pulled the gun out. And you talking about a place clearing out at the count of one. I was the only one left in there when I pulled that gun out. And I'm not saying this like I'm proud or anything like that, but it's just the point of, you know, when people are angry, you respond to your anger issues, and later on you may regret them. Now, fortunately, I did not shoot the gun that particular time either, but that was the last of the guns I ever had in my life. And I know that if I had a gun, that if someone... what I would only probably use it if someone was trying to break into my home, or a person may have pulled a gun on me or whatever. But I'm not just going to go out and you know, be looking for someone to shoot up that's done something to me or anything like that. And furthermore, I don't even want to own a gun, because I know that it may come a time when I would have to use it, but I really don't want to use it, you know. But, you know, people who have issues and just go out and just kill people just because, okay, I'm mad at my wife, so I'm going to go down here and kill up everybody. Just like the guy who shot the people in the movie theater, I think, I don't remember where that was either. And the young guy who shot up the church in South Carolina. You know, they even took that guy to lunch, bought him something to eat. And, you know, that was sickening right there. Because how are you going to go into a church where people are worshiping, and you're going to pull out a gun? The people had welcomed him into the church. It was a white boy. They had welcomed him into the church, as they generally do. You know, you go to a church and nobody's going to tell you to get out. You know, he was welcomed into the church. He gets into the church, and he wants to kill people. What was that all about? In a church. And that's not the first church. You know, but... It's just so crazy. Now, would he have went into that church and tried to fight everybody up in there? I think not. But he goes in there with a gun, and I think he killed 9 people and injured some other people. But you can't even go to church and be safe. You know, because anytime somebody gonna come up in a church with a gun and kill parishioners, they do have issues. They do have issues. And sometimes people don't take the time to try to get help, or, you know, maybe sometimes they may have tried to get help and they was refused help because they have no insurance or whatever. But still, that does not give you the right take a gun and go in a church, go into somebody's home, go into a store or whatever, and just kill people. That's horrible. You know, and people already have issues and things that they're dealing with themselves, and then to be faced with somebody having a gun in your face. Oh, I've been through that. I've been through that too. I was I wasn't an angel, and I'm still not an angel, but I have changed my life quite a bit. But when I was out there, you know, doing things that weren't legal guy came into my apartment one night, put a gun to my head. He robbed me. I was selling drugs at that particular time. He robbed me of my drugs and my money. And all I could think about when he had that gun to my head was, God, please don't let this man blow my brains out, because my daughter and my nephew were in the other room. And if I'm not mistaken, I think my daughter had opened the door, and I told her to shut the door, shut the door. But fortunately, the guy just took the drugs and the money, and he left. Another time, after that incident, I had a bodyguard, and little did I know this guy was cuckoo, but he went off one night because he was paranoid. He was shooting up cocaine and became paranoid and was shooting all in my house, and, you know, because he thought he was seeing people in my house, which there was nobody in there except for my next-door neighbor. She had moved over there because she had got evicted from her apartment. She had moved in with me. She was in the living room. My kids were in their room, and I was in my room. And all of a sudden, he just says, tell me to tell my girlfriend who lived next door to come in the bedroom. And, you know, and then when she came in there, he said, who else is out there? She said, nobody. You're lying. There's somebody else out there. Oh, it was crazy that night. He shot up the walls, and the police came. They took him away. And he had even threatened to kill me because he told me that he used to be, well, he was a hitman, and he was telling me about these people he killed, and, you know, I don't know if it's true or not, but possibly it could have been, but I don't know. But, you know, he just told me all this. But he had did run into a friend of mine and asked my friend to bring him to my place because he wanted to kill me, because he thought that I had brought people in there to do harm to him. And like I said, nobody was in the apartment that night except for me, my girlfriend, my kids, and him. But he was so paranoid. So that was that. But I was so afraid. And what happened was my son was asleep in the other room because he had me in the room, my daughter in the room, and my son, I don't know if the shots had woke him up, but he came in the room and he wrestled the gun from this person. And that was really brave of my son because he could have shot my son, you know. And at that particular time, I think my son must have been, he was young, but, you know, some youngsters have no fear of certain situations, but when he came in there, he wrestled the gun from the guy, and the police came, and they took him, and they locked him up, took him up to St. Elizabeth, which is a mental institution. He calls me, and he asked me, he says, Shorty, why you get them people in there on me? I said, what are you talking about? He said, them people that you got in there to kill me. I said, nobody was in here but me, my friend from next, girlfriend from next door, and the kids. We were the only ones in there. He said, Shorty, stop lying. So I just hung the phone up on him because right then and there, I was like, OMG, why is he talking like that? That was like really frightening to me, you know, because he actually believed in his mind that I had gotten somebody in there to kill him. But and it was another time when I had a gun pulled on me. This was a guy, I was in the same guy I was in a relationship that I had pulled a gun on him. I think this was, what had happened was, we had broken up, and I'm trying to move on with my life, you know, getting him out of my system, and he comes to my house one night saying he wants to talk to me. So I said, okay, no problem. Big mistake. So we're sitting in the living room. My kids are in the bed because it was after 11 o'clock, and I think it was a school night. I'm not sure. But anyway, he comes in, and we're sitting down, and he's telling me, you know, I love you, blah, 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 this and that, whatever. But see, the reason we broke up was because he was cheating on me. That's why we broke up. So we're sitting there, and, you know, I put my head back, I close my eyes, and I hear this rustling, like, you know, like a paper bag or something. I don't know what it was. When I opened my eyes, he had a gun to my head telling me, if I can't have you, nobody's going to have you. I'm going to kill you, then I'm going to kill myself. I said, God, please don't let this man pull that trigger. My kids are in the bed, and I am not ready to die. So the phone rang, and it was my brother. My brother was looking for him, you know, so I gave him the phone. He said he'd be there shortly. So anyway, he takes me with him. He holds the gun on me and takes me with him. Lo and behold, when we got to where my brother was, the first thing I screamed out was, he got a gun. I don't know where these policemen came from, but it seemed like as soon as I said gun, police were everywhere. They were everywhere, and they had locked him up. He had taken his father's gun, and they had locked him up. So needless to say, I didn't press charges at that particular time. We eventually got back into the relationship. But that was the three times, I think, that someone has actually pulled a gun on me or held a gun on me. And it's frightening, you know, because there's so much power behind that gun. Because all you have to do is pull the trigger. You can annihilate someone depending on where you shoot them. And I did not want to die. Neither of those times when those guns were on me, I did not want to die. So, I just, you know, it's frightening. It's really frightening, you know, to be face to face with a gun in your face. And, you know, praying and hoping that this lunatic or this person on the other end of that gun does not pull the trigger, because you don't know if you're going to survive or if you're not. And I'm always looking to survive, because I've been through some changes. I have been through some changes in my life. I once OD'd and was taken to the hospital DOA. But my time wasn't up because God brought me back. You know, and that wasn't the first time that I OD'd, but it was the first time that I was DOA, dead on arrival. But, you know, it's just so many things that people need to come to grips with in this life, because life is short. Number one, life is short. We don't know if we're going to wake up the next day. We don't know if we're going to walk outside and get shot. We don't know. We don't know. So I'm just trying to live my life accordingly. And that's accordingly to God's laws. And, you know, if some of man's law don't interfere with God's laws, I live by them as well. But when they start interfering with God's laws or things that I know that are not right, I'm going to try my best. I'm going to do my best. Not try, I'm going to do my best to stay away from those. Because there are all kind of laws out there that they have that are in conflict with God's laws. You know, like they say, it's legal to have an abortion. That's murder. That is murder. So, you know, that's one law that I'm not going to be obeying as far as man is concerned. You know, but I realize, you know, like it says in the Bible, many of the things to Caesar that are Caesar's and the things to God that are God. And there are the laws of the land that we, some laws of the land that we do have to follow. But God's laws never change. Man's laws change to fit whatever they want to fit. You know, just like when the crack epidemic was out, they changed the law. If you dealt crack, you got more time than a person who did powder. What's the difference? It's still the same drug, but it's ingested differently. But the reason they changed that law, because the powder form was basically Caucasian's drug of choice. You know, and it was like a recreational drug. You know, everybody did it. All the whites did it. From doctors to lawyers, teachers, whatever. You know, but then when the crack epidemic hit, OMG, no, we got to get those African-Americans off the street. We got to give them all this time. We got to do this because that's not what we are used to. So the laws were changed. But getting back to the guns, I really do feel sorry for people who have been affected by them, you know, all the African-Americans as well as white people who have been killed needlessly by guns. Police killing African-Americans at will and getting away with it. You know, calling it justifiable homicide. How can it be justifiable if you're shooting a man in his head when his hands are handcuffed behind him? How can it be justifiable homicide when a man is running away and you're shooting him in the back? You know, how can it be justifiable when a man is down on the ground and you're shooting him in the back? What's so justifiable about that? But that's just the cold blue. You know, rarely do you hear of a police getting charged with murdering a civilian. But they do. But you can count on one hand that amount. But you can count on all the hands that you have, your feet, toes, and whatever, how many times they killed civilians and got away with it, particularly African Americans. But, you know, that's just the way it is. So, all you people out there that are selling guns, buying guns, trading guns, running guns, shooting guns, my God, have mercy on your souls. That's all I can say because it's not right. It is not right. And, you know, just like I said, I've had guns in my hands before too, but you know, I'm not saying that it was right because I was angry. And like I said, danger one letter away from anger. You know, who's normal? Who's normal? holds a gun in their hand and kills somebody. You know, what is normal? To have a gun. You know, so my thing is, if you have a gun, be very, very careful. Be very careful, especially if you have a gun in your home and you have kids, because kids are getting hold of these guns and killing their siblings. They're killing themselves. You know, it's no good in a gun. You know, if I ever came, if I had a gun and I came home or was at home, because sometimes a parent can be at home when it happens, and one of my children shot the other and killed them, I believe I would be in a loony bin for the rest of my life. Especially behind the fact that it was my gun. I didn't have it properly secured. My child killed my other child. I couldn't live with that. I couldn't live with it. I also couldn't live with the fact if my child took my gun out of the house and killed somebody. Or shot somebody, or shot it, or whatever. You know, I could not live with that. So, to eliminate those types of emotions from happening from the beginning, I would never have a gun in my house. For my child to take to school, or to take to his girlfriend's house and blow her brains out. You know, so you have to be careful, you know, because I know the guns, they're going to be here forever. They're going to be here. There's no getting out of that. But if you have a gun, be very careful. And if you ever pull a gun on somebody, it's best that you use it. Or if you're just pulling a gun on somebody to scare them, make sure they don't have a gun so they can come back and retaliate, because that doesn't work all the time neither. You pull a gun on somebody, you're going to go home, and this person is going to appreciate that. You know, they're going to be looking for you. So it's just best that if it's possible, leave the guns alone. Leave the guns where people who think they need them, leave them with them. But my thing is, they need to get rid of all the guns, every last one of them. So that's just my take on it. You know, because like I said, life is short, and you're making it shorter when you kill somebody. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with the second part of the show, and that's when I'll reveal what rapists and gun shooter have in common.
You're listening to If Life Gives You Lemons, Make a Martini Show at 109.9 Blog Talk Radio. Coming to you live from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Hosted by Gail St. Francis Johnson, formerly known as Miss Delicious. For questions or comments, the call-in number is 646-652-2877. That's 646-652-2877. 562-2877. And remember,
a mighty long time. SpongeBob, my baby, ooh. A mighty long time. Chubop, chubop, my baby, ooh.
Then you act Listen up, I got to tell you about this beautiful author and publisher, Gail Delicious Johnson. Gail Delicious Johnson is proud to announce the publication of her new, revised issue of her latest suspenseful novel, Back to Zero. Read this riveting story of intrigue, conflict, love, and suspense. Follow the trail of abuse, secrets, lies, and love. And check it out. You can't just read the back of the book, because you have to prepare yourself for the mind-blowing, explosive ending. Order your personally autographed copy of Back to Zero by visiting www.jjpublishing.com. That's www.jayjaypublishing.com.
Back to Zero is a fictional story with a dash of reality. It's a tale about Anthony Thomas, a man who lost the most precious things in his life, starting with his first childhood love, Gloria. Tragedy soon followed after losing his mom to cancer, and shortly thereafter, he lost his wife, Lynn, and son, Junior, in a horrific car crash. With each traumatic incident, Anthony was branded, sending him back to zero. 30 years later, Anthony runs into Gloria, and the flames in their hearts are still burning. Gloria, now a law enforcement official who also comes with baggage, a psychotic husband named Wayne Anderson who is out of control. He too is a law enforcement official that's abusive, jealous, and an alcoholic. Wayne treats Gloria miserable. While snooping behind his wife, he finds out that she had research information concerning Anthony on the internet. Wayne goes into a rage of madness like a rabid dog because in his sick, twisted mind, he feels threatened and accuses Gloria of sleeping with Anthony. Often he would evict her from the house, but not realizing the night would come when he forces his wife straight into the arms of Anthony. After spending an intense, earth-shattering night of lovemaking, Gloria opens up and confesses to Anthony that she still loves him. Rekindling their relationship is dangerous, and Wayne will stop at nothing to make his wife and her first love's life a miserable hell while fighting his own demons. Wayne harbors a deep, dark, and deadly secret, one he thought he and only the devil knew. Find out what happens when Gloria uncovers the truth about her abusive, lawless husband's mysterious past. The devastation will bring the three of them together in an explosive confrontation. Find out the shocking secrets Wayne harbored and prepare yourself for who will pay the ultimate price for his lawless actions. Gail Delicious Johnson says, Back to Zero will take you where the law becomes the abuser. Order this fast-paced, action-packed field drama by best-selling author Gail Delicious Johnson from her web store at JJ Publishing. That's J-A-Y-J-A-Y Publishing.com. Remember, abuse is never an option.
All righty. Welcome back, everybody. The musical, of course, that I played was Bill Withers, Use Me. Before that, Barbara Mason, Hello Stranger. And at the top, Aretha Franklin, Food for You, Baby. Hope you guys go to my website and order that book. It also has a shooter in it. So, and it's a very, very good book. I've got nothing but good reviews on it. So pick up your copy at jjpublishing.com. That's J-A-Y-J-A-Y publishing.com. All right, we're going to get right back into the show. We've already talked about a gun shooter, and now we're going to talk about rapists. On my show, I've mentioned before that I've been raped, also molested. I was raped at 15 by a total stranger and molested by a doctor at 16. Before you think, well, how was I molested at 16 and didn't know it? I will explain that shortly. But first, I'm going to let you guys know what a rapist and a shooter have in common, or think have the same thought pattern, or the same MO when they are raping someone or they're shooting someone. It's about power, you know, having that control over someone, you know, putting fear into someone. That's what a shooter and a rapist have in common. It's not so much about a rapist getting off, having an orgasm or anything like that. It's just the point of them having that control and that power over their victim, as I was a victim. Like I said, when I was 15 years old, I'm now 68 years old. And it took me up into my 50s before I actually forgave this guy for raping me, you know, because it was like I was carrying around these bricks, you know, just weighing me down, you know, having that bitterness in my heart for him and, you know, having these nightmares and going through the whole gamut of, you know, seeing that incident over and over again in my mind and, you know, not being able to come to grips with it, you know, because I went through a lot of changes trying to cover it up, you know, becoming a drug addict, shutting down sexually. And then when I did find out that I was just, you know, looking for love in all the wrong places and, you know, just doing a lot of things to cover up that pain and that humiliation, that hurt, that, you know, that horrendous act that had happened to me. It was brutal rape, too. And the guy who raped me, like I said, I did not know him. His name is Ronald Haywood. He lives in Washington, D.C. That's where I'm originally from, but I migrated to Fayetteville, North Carolina in 2016, so I've been down here ever since. But like I said, that happened when I was 15 years old. And I really, when it happened, when he was finished raping me, because I'm not going to really get all into the details or anything like that, but he did punch me in my mouth so hard until by the time I had put my hands up to my face, blood was just everywhere. It's a wonder he didn't knock my tooth out, you know, but it was just horrendous that night and how he threatened me. And, you know, I was so afraid, you know, and so I just really can't describe how I was really feeling, you know, the thoughts that was going through my head, because when he finished, he asked me, was I going to tell anybody? And, of course, I said no, because if I had told him, yeah, I'm going to tell, I may not be here to tell the story, you know, at all. So I told him no, I wasn't going to tell, but as soon, and then he had the audacity to walk me back to where he had basically kidnapped me. And when I knocked on the person's door, because it was me and a couple of girls that was together that night, I knocked on my girlfriend's door. He was standing on the edge of the porch, and when her mom opened the door, I screamed, he raped me, and he ran. But he was eventually brought to trial, and I'm telling you, they tried to make it seem like it was my fault. You know, his attorney was asking me, what did I have on, and did I go with him willingly, and, you know, just questions that were so humiliating and embarrassing, like it was my fault, you know, like I just asked to be raped that night. What was I wearing? Did he ejaculate? And I didn't even know what ejaculation meant during that time, you know, I didn't even know what it was. But he was brought to trial and convicted. You know, he tried to lie his way out of it, which he couldn't. And they gave him the Youth Act. It was a program back during that time where if you was like, before you turned, I think it was 21 for men and 18 for women, if you did a crime in your youth, you could get out once you became an adult. So he was 17 at that particular time, so they let him out when he was 21, which to me, when a person rapes a man, woman, child, or whatever, they should not be released from jail. A rapist and a murderer should never be released from jail because they have that mindset that I did it once, I can do it again. Or especially if rapists get away with it or a murder get away with it, they will continue to do that until they're eventually caught. And who's to say when a person is ready? A rapist and a murderer, they're basically on the same line as far as I'm concerned, because a rapist, he murders your ability to do certain things. Like some women, they can't be happy in relationships. Some women become prostitutes. Some women become rapists themselves, you know, molesting young children. And, you know, it's just so many things that when you're raped that could cause emotions and cause a person to go through different reactions when different things occur to them in their life. You know, because myself, I would never, ever want anybody to go through what I went through. So as far as me molesting somebody or being a rapist or anything like that, that would never happen with me, because I just don't, I really wouldn't want anybody to go through that. And then the fact of the matter, some of these rapists do things to women, like maybe kill them or mutilate them or, you know, threaten them and, you know, force them into silence and, you know, all these old crazy things that they do. And see, a person never realizes what another person goes through who goes through being violated like that. A child, a man, or a woman. Teenagers, you know, they don't think about that. All they're thinking about is this power that they have over this person at this particular time. Yeah, they're going to surrender, they're going to do this, they're going to do that because they don't want to be killed, or, you know, this is what I want to do to them because I can. You know, but what Ronald did to me was sending me down a path of this self-destruction, a path of not loving myself, a path of not understanding how to be lovable. You know, it was all these things that had occurred in my life all on the strength of him raping me. And like I said, they once they do it, they'll do it again because he did it again. I hadn't saw him in all these years. I think the next time I saw him, I was in my 40s. In my 40s when I saw him again, and I really didn't recognize him. But one of the girls who was with me that night was talking to him. And I asked her, I said, "Who was that you was talking to?" When she said his name, I said, "What?" I said, "What are y'all talking about?" She said, "Oh, we were just talking about, I was talking about my son, whatever." "But why are you talking to this person?" She was the person who had testified against him in court. You know, I would, and then we, her and I were friends. So how are you going to talk to somebody who you knew raped me? You testified against him, and you're all up in his face like nothing happened. But guess what? They eventually got into a relationship, and he started raping her and sodomizing her, treating her like crap. When she told me they was in a relationship, I could not believe it. It was just like old wounds opening up again. And I asked her, I said, "Well, do you trust him?" She said, "Well, he told me that what he did to you, he was young and he had apologized." He didn't apologize to me. And then apology is at that particular time, if he had came back to me in that particular time, I don't even think I would have accepted an apology. Because how are you going to apologize to somebody who you put fear in them, raping them, threatening them? How are you going to accept an apology from this person? And like I said, I was like in my 50s before I forgave him, because I just, you know, the more I held all that anger in, that animosity and those ill feelings I had for him, he was getting on with his life. He was still doing what he was doing, still being the person that he always was, which was a low life. And here I am, you know, having nightmares and, you know, thinking about it and going through this and going through that. So once I forgave him, it was like those bricks were lifted off my shoulder, getting on with my life, you know, doing what I have to do. And, you know, I'll never forget it, but I did forgive him. You know, then you have all these women that are coming forward saying that they were molested or they were raped by these men all these years ago. Now, I can understand a person being embarrassed, humiliated, not wanting to go through, you know, the shame of confronting your accuser and, you know, things like that. But if you don't do that, that's how the people, the rapists, continuously get away with it. Because if one person lets them get away with it, they're going to continue to do what they do. The next thing you know, they done raped all these women. And, you know, out of fear, they're not saying anything. Tell somebody. If you don't want to tell the proper authorities, tell somebody to tell the proper authorities or something. I mean, and like I said, I understand. I know the hurt, the humiliation, all the things that go along with being raped make a person feel less than a woman, confused, not lovable. You know, you go through those changes. But if you don't tell, the person is going to do it to somebody else. And that somebody else may go through the same thing you go through. Or that person may become the person that comes the next molester of a child or, you know, just going through crazy things. You know, so you have to get the courage up, you know, just to tell somebody. Because it's crazy now, all these actors and stars are coming out saying they was molested by Russell Simmons, Bill Cosby, Harvey, what was that guy's name? The British guy. But, I mean, it's just so many of them just coming out. You know, women are coming out accusing these men of molesting them. Even President Donald Trump. Talking about grabbing a woman by her private part. That's molestation. You know, and there's no telling. He just, you know, but I guess because of a person's status and money, you know, money can buy anything. You know, any thing that's that you can use money for, but there are things that money can't buy. Money cannot buy happiness. It cannot buy happiness. Money can't buy love, not true love. But there are things that money can buy a person's silence. You know. But my thing is, if someone touches you inappropriately, tell them that's not allowed. Don't continuously let it go on and on and on and on, and then you get tired of it, then you want to speak up. Let them know from the beginning, I don't appreciate you putting your hands on me. Don't touch me anymore. But see, the casting couch, some of these women may have done it because they wanted to see their names in light, or for whatever reason. But don't sell yourself so short. Don't sell yourself so cheap. Now you're coming and screaming and hollering about this this British guy who raped women, molested women. They had him on tape trying to get with this woman. You know, so he's lost this, he's lost that. But what about, that's not going to stop him from doing what he's doing. Because he's gotten away with it. He's gotten away with it for so long. You know, so you have to put your foot down and say, stop, don't touch me. As far as the doctor who had molested me, I didn't know that I was being molested until, I think that happened when I was 16. I didn't know I was being molested until I had went to another doctor, and the way that doctor was examining me was not the same way the other doctor had examined me. So I knew that something was wrong, because the first doctor that I went to, he was playing with my clitoris, my nipples. You know, I didn't know that, you know, because that's my first time ever going to a doctor who examined you like that. So I'm saying, you know, okay. But, you know, I was feeling some type of way, but I never expressed that to anybody. I never told anybody about it. And that's when I was 16, like I said. And I found out when I went to another doctor when I think I was 19. And this doctor, you know, he wasn't examining me like that. So I saw on, I think it was an Oprah show, where these women were saying doctors had molested them and the things the doctors had done to them. I said, OMG, I was molested. Didn't even know it. Because if I had known that that doctor had molested me, I would have reported him as well. And he's dead. He's been dead, you know, but what can I say? Even if he was alive, you know, me saying, like, when I found out, if I'd have said it when I was 19, he molested me, they're going to be throwing so many questions up in my face. What did he do? How did he do it? Whatever, whatever. And, you know, getting this proof. And, you know, they look on, like, people with money or people who have high positions. They always try to get them off. Well, you know, I don't believe he did that because he's a doctor, whatever. First of all, before he became a doctor, he was a man, and he's still a man. And men do things that men do. So if he's one of those men who molests women when they come into his office, you know, that has nothing to do with him being a doctor. So, like I said, you know, women, if you're being touched inappropriately, or you don't like the way someone is looking at you, doing any type of sexual harassment, report it. Don't let them get away with it. Just report it as soon as it happens. And sometimes you have to put your pride aside, and, you know, because this could happen to somebody else. Maybe you can prevent it from happening to somebody else, you know. And then, you know, God forbid if these women are lying on these men. You know, I really hope that, you know, the accusations that they're making are true, because it would be so terrible if these women were just lying on these men just to have something to say. You know, just jumping on the bandwagon like all those women did with Bill Cosby. And, but I don't know if he raped anybody. I don't know if he molested anybody. I was not there. But I know about me. I know that I was raped, and I know that I was molested. And I didn't want to be silent about my rape, because I just knew that it was wrong for that guy to do what he did to me and to let him get away with it. You know, like I said, he's still, you know, even when I seen him when I was in my 40s. And he got with the girl who had testified against him. He was raping her and sodomizing her. So he was no different than when he was 17. But she trusted him and she let him in her life, and that's what happened. But anyway, I'm just sounding off, you know, because, you know, if life gives you lemons, make a martini, you know, and I do believe that quite a few of us have been given some lemons and made lemonade or whatever, but, you know, that's just the cliche or that old adage of what to do with life and how to handle it. You know, because sometimes people don't know what to do when they're in certain situations. They don't know how to get out of certain situations, who to talk to, where to go, you know. And I've never received counseling or anything like that. You know, when I was raped, it was hush, hush, quiet. We never talked about it in my family. As a matter of fact, when I had saw this guy again, after I saw him in my 40s, I saw him again at a reunion we had, and I told my, and he was, every time I would look up, he was looking in my face, and I told my sister, I said, that guy keeps staring at me. So she said, who? I said, the guy who raped me. And you know what my sister said? I didn't know you was raped. Well, whatever. I do. My brother knows. My mother knew. So, you know, that's really basically all that it mattered to anyway. But that's what my sister had told me. She didn't know that I had been raped. But you know, just be more open and try to get it out. You know, don't wait for years and years and years to go by, because it's hard. It's going to be kind of hard to prove things or to, you know, set the record straight, because after so many years, you can't remember what had happened, but it's going to be a thing where they're going to be asking you questions that you may not can answer. So, you know, just always be diligent and be careful when you go out with men. Don't ever go to a man's place the first night you meet him. Don't get in strangers' cars. You know, just be a little bit more careful about things that you do, so you won't attract, or, you know, give a person any type of signals that, oh, she's loose, she's this, she's that. And watch how you dress sometimes, because not to say that you can't wear what you want to wear, but some men think that if you're showing this, you know, he wants to go and, you know, do whatever. He wants to rape you because you have on a short dress or whatever. Well, the end of the show, we only have a few more minutes left, and I'm going to close the show out by telling you guys, if you're drinking and driving, don't drink and drive. Don't drive and drink. Remember, if no one told you they love you today, I do, and so does God. I love talking to you, not about you. Love seeing you, not viewing you. With that being said, everybody have a wonderful evening, and see you guys next week or the week after next, because next week is Thanksgiving weekend. But anyway, have a good night. Bye-bye.
Never would have made it. Never could have made it without you. but now I see how you were there for me, and I can say, never would have made it, never could have made it without you. I would have lost it all, but now I see how you were there for me, and I can say, I'm stronger, I'm wiser, I'm better, much better. When I look back over all you brought me through, just need to testify to somebody next to him. Tell him, I'm strong, I'm wise, I'm better, much better. When I look back over what he brought me through, I realize I made it.
Remember, Thanksgiving is Thursday. If someone's homeless, please give them a plate of food. It could be you.
So much better. I made it. Is there anybody in this house other than me that could declare you made it? Tell your neighbor, never would have made it.
Never would have made it.
Tell him, never could have made it. Oh, I wish I had some help here. I wish I had just two or three people that would just declare it. Never would have made it. Never could have made it.
Never could have made it.
I just love to encourage myself. Sometimes I just look in the mirror and say, I'm strong. I'm wise. I am better.
Thank you for listening to my Nana's Internet Radio Show, because it's the best. Good night.